Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
Hey, 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 this is Dave Denniston. Welcome back to another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. You know what it's for, helping you slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. And for this last episode of the month, I am yet once again, for the final time, turning the tables around and featuring an interview that I thought was particularly good with Laura McElderry. She is not a physician, but she is married to one. So this Married to Physicians podcast, I highly recommend. She talks about a lot of great topics. Maybe you need to turn your spouse onto it. And so I thought we really covered a lot of ground, talked about a lot of good things worth thinking about and basic principles. So make sure to tune in and enjoy. With no further ado, here is the episode with me being interviewed by Laura.
This is the Married to Doctors podcast, episode number 33.
There are proactive tax planners and there's bean counters. Most CPAs are bean counters. They prepare returns. They don't help you proactively reduce your taxes.
Welcome to the Married to Doctors podcast. Because we know that being married to a doctor isn't always as glamorous as it sounds, our podcast helps successful homes be happier. We're here to build community, hear your stories, and explore solutions with the experts. Here's your host, Laura McElderry.
Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast. So glad that you are here listening. Super excited to introduce you to my guest today. Now for today's guest, Dave Denniston, great guy. Interviewed him quite a while back and I'm glad to finally be releasing his episode. I do not have a financial podcast, you guys know that. But I do think from time to time it's important to take a second and say, hey, some financial things are pretty important to our lives. And so he is a tax expert and he actually has his own podcast, which is called the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. If you want to go check that out, you can. He actually had me on his show back in April and that was really fun. He asked great questions, so you can check that one out or just browse, of course, and find the information that you're wanting in the business world. We are going to talk taxes a little bit. And like I said, we're also going to talk about his little girl who was born very prematurely and some of his experiences that he had in the hospital with her and with his wife when they were going through that experience. I'm very glad he was on the show and that he was willing to share his story with us. And I hope that all of you enjoy this episode. Dave Denniston, thank you so much for joining me on the Married to Doctors podcast.
Well, thank you, Laura. So glad to be here.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation because most of the people I interview, they're doctors themselves, they're married to doctors, and you're neither one, right?
Yeah, I like to pretend to be a doctor every so often, but no, unfortunately, I am neither of those things.
Right, but you have some experience in the medical world and you went through kind of some interesting experiences, and then you also work with physicians in your professional business. So go ahead and introduce us to yourself and to your family.
Well, thank you again so much for having me. So glad to be here. For me, a lot of what I do is giving back to the physician community. I want to take you back to a moment about 6 years ago now, unbelievably. It was late April 2012. My wife was having these pounding headaches. She was having blurred vision. She was having just searing pain all throughout her body. And she was in and out of the hospital, admitted, not admitted, admitted, not admitted. And she was pregnant. And it was a very difficult pregnancy. In a previous pregnancy with our oldest daughter, who is now going on 13, my goodness, my wife had had toxemia and preeclampsia and horrible seizures postpartum. And that wasn't a lot of fun. Thank goodness everything turned out okay. It was a very touchy time. So this time in this pregnancy, we're telling doctors, hey, watch out for that again. And they said, oh, it can't possibly clinically diagnose until about week 30, week 32. Well, here my wife was 20, 21, 22, and finally 23 weeks in gestation with our daughter. And so we were shuttled between hospitals. It was now Mother's Day, May 13th, 2012. My birthday actually is May 12th, so it was the previous day. I was not having a good birthday that particular year. We were meeting with some fellow neonatology fellows and neonatology doctors and all kinds of people. And as they did the ultrasound, the kiddo really wasn't moving much at all. They warned us that the blood flow was starting to slow between her and my wife, and that we might have to make a really bad decision. Well, turn out May 13th, we were told that she is fighting, she is getting weaker and weaker, and that in their opinion, she needed to come out, but it was our choice. And I remember this moment where, being the numbers geek that I am, I was like, well, what are her chances of surviving? What's the probability? The doctors didn't want to say. And so I kept pressing. So what could happen here? Give me the lowdown. And so the doctor, she took a deep swallow and she answered less than 40%. And then she was honest. She said, in her case, it's all or nothing. We were at this crossroads where we had this mind-numbing decision. I mean, literally life and death, right? You know, if we take her out, she might pass away. If we keep her in, she could pass away from the blood flow slowing down. So we could really get screwed either way. But we made this decision. We agreed with the doctor's opinion and asked them to proceed. I was there just trembling. My oldest daughter, we only had one kiddo at the time. This was going to be our second. I had to turn around and explain it to her. She was 5, 6 years old. Her name's Gabby. And I got down on one knee. Tears were starting to roll down my cheeks. And I told her, Gabby, I need you to believe with me because your sister may not make it today. And we don't know what could happen with mommy. Her eyes got so big. Her eyes were just watering. And I thought I was going to lose it. Luckily, we had a family friend there, gave her a hug. I went into the surgery room. She was wheeled in there with my wife. And they were prepping her. And I was just trembling and gnawing with anxiety. I couldn't stop pacing, was just praying and having faith for it. And I was there in the delivery room as they take out this tiny 23-week-old gestationally child who gives a little squawk. And I'm filming the whole thing. They run her around to the other side. I go out there with them, filming it, sitting behind the camera, just throwing up prayers. And the neonatology fellow and neonatologist, after several attempts that seemed like it was hours, but was probably only a minute or two, they get this little breathing tube down her tiny, tiny, tiny little throat. And she made it. This little tiny miracle girl born at 12.4 ounces, that's a few ounces short of a pound, she made it. We named her Evangeline, meaning bearer of good news. And this really changed our lives forever. Our lives revolved around the hospital. She was in the NICU for nearly 5 months. She went through pneumonia. My wife and I certainly had some relational ups and downs during that time period. We also had the chance to get to know a lot of residents and fellows and nurses and all these wonderful people who we were at the NICU with. A lot of what I do is giving back because I'm so grateful to those physicians, those nurses, all those wonderful, wonderful people, because we wouldn't have our family as it is today without those wonderful folks that helped us. 6 years later, she's doing great now.
Oh my goodness. This is such a touching story. So she's in kindergarten, first grade?
We held her back. She has a little bit of mental development issues, but nothing crazy, super serious. So we kept her in preschool. Technically, she would have been born in September of 2012. So she would be turning 6 this September. So you have to think of it that way in some senses. So we held her back and she's going to be starting kindergarten in the fall and she's all ready to go now.
Fantastic. I think that's such a miracle. It really is such a privilege for our physicians and our spouse. A lot of times, most of my listeners are married to docs. So like, I think it's so neat when we hear these stories of the happy stories, you know, when it worked out, when things went well. And just in you telling that, I'm thinking about, oh, those physicians that have to bear that bad news and, you know, say those things to families. It's hard on the physicians and obviously more so on the families that are in those difficult situations. So I'm kind of curious, like you mentioned that it was a little difficult for you and your wife with your daughter in the hospital for 4 or 5 months. I can only imagine the stress that that was. How do you think physicians can continue to show empathy over time to patients and families that are long-term in the hospital?
Well, the people we were at, we're here in Minneapolis area, and we were at Fairview Riverside NICU, and the people there were just awesome. You know, it really gave me a lot more faith in the medical profession than I think I had before. You know, I was probably a little more on the jaded side, but I don't know how much more they could do to help. I mean, they constantly checked in and asked questions, and it's a training hospital. So there were lots of residents and fellows and people rotating through. And I really have no constructive criticism at all. They hooked us up with resources. We got a month of our mortgage paid for free because they had certain resources around that we could help and apply for due to loss of income during that time period. I really wish I had something that could be constructive criticism. I can't say enough good things about how good care the whole staff took care of me and my family. I think they really treated us as humans. You know, it didn't feel like a number. Many other times when you just go in primary care, you know, you can feel like you're just a number. You know, we felt truly honored and cared for, even with the rotation of physicians, even with rotation of residents and fellows, really got to know everybody there. So huge shout out to everyone that is a neonatologist or pediatrician, you know, working in those situations. I just can't thank them enough.
Yeah, I think that's so great because I love when we get to hear like the thank yous back, because goodness knows we hear a lot of complaining.
Yes.
I'm always amazed at people who make snide comments about doctors to my face. I'm like, you know, I'm married to a doctor and I really don't think they're jerks. And I don't think they're trying to like not spend enough time with you or not communicate well with you. It's just easy to pick on physicians. And I think it's too, you know, usually when you see a physician, it's not your best day, right? There's something going on that's causing that visit. So,
well, I think part of it is the difference between spending 5 or 10 minutes with someone versus seeing them on like a daily basis for months, right? I mean, you know, we were parked there. That was where our lives revolved around. So I think it was just a much different experience going through that than just, you know, seeing your primary care doc for 5 or 10 minutes. Okay, bye, see ya. You know, here's something for your cold or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It was just a different kind of situation.
For sure. So she was born under a pound. And then how much did she weigh 4 months later when you took her home?
She was, it was a lot of water weight, you know, because they had all kinds of stuff hooked up to her. She had started to feed from a bottle by the time she left. She still had the nasal cannula. Probably 2 or 3 months in, she had the breathing tube come out of her throat and then get on the nasal cannula. She was probably 8 pounds, something like that, by the time we left.
Okay. So kind of newborn, healthy weight range when you took her home, but four months old at 8 pounds.
Yes.
Right.
And a lot of water weight. You know, it wasn't like fat from eating. You know, it was just, she was just a little more, I don't want to say the word swollen, but just had that water weight.
Yeah. Water weight. No, that's fine. Yeah. She was just plumped up from the fluids, which was good. So after this experience, you kind of took your previous career and you changed it up just a little bit. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. So I'm an author, podcaster, and I have multiple businesses that I own now at this particular point. The author side of it, I really had kind of different focuses. I was focusing on people that are in corporations and had stock awards. I was focusing on the general population and helping people get out of debt. I had already written one book for physicians that was called 5 Steps to Get Out of Debt for Doctors. And after going through this experience, you know what? I said, this is where I want to give back and focus. If anyone's ever written books or done podcasts or blogging, you'll know that you're not in it for the monetary benefit, at least initially, most of us. I don't know. You could probably speak to this as well as I can. Unless you get blessed with finding advertisers quickly, which most of us do not, there's not a whole lot of financial rewards for it. A little bit, you know, you get an extra dinner out here or there, but it's not something where you're swimming like Scrooge McDuck in a money bin.
Right. I mean, podcasts are free, right? I look at this more as a passion project than a business, because it's me trying to give back and kind of create a resource that I feel like physician families need. But yeah, certainly podcasting and money are not necessarily cozy partners all the time.
No, not at all. Podcasting, unfortunately, isn't a great way of making money. But for me, I thought a lot about legacy. What kind of legacy do I want to leave as one day, you know, for my family, for people? And I really thought about giving back to the physician community. So I started writing several books. I wrote one on taxes. I wrote one on insurance. I had my first big book, The Freedom Formula for Physicians. We have another one coming out shortly that's specifically for residents, fellows, those in training. So I did that, and I started the podcast back in 2013, almost a year after my daughter was born. It's been a journey, you know, just and connecting and learning and trying to help people become financially free and enjoy life in the process somehow, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought I'd just ask you a couple of tax questions today. We're not going to get into the trenches of taxes, mostly because I don't think I could hang there very well. I'm still learning a lot of this myself, but I did want to just ask you, I guess let's do this in three categories. Throw some advice out there for med students, then throw some advice out there for those in training, and again for attendings. Like just one little or two little gems for each category.
Absolutely. Well, let me just kind of cap this off with saying, so many physicians say, I wish I learned this stuff in medical school. And I think the beauty of today's world, whether it's podcasts or blogs or whatever, this information is out there. As a matter of fact, I was a finance major in college, and they didn't teach this stuff to me either in business school. So you're not alone. This is knowledge I personally had to obtain on my own. In relation to medical students, well, really, in terms of taxes, there's really not a whole lot medical students need to do, right? I mean, they're not
making... We have no income.
There's no income. There's really not much to do. I will say some medical students do have, if some by some reason that they can fit in some little time in the day, that they have some sort of side hustle. You know, maybe they have some 1099 income. They're probably not doing locums yet or anything like that. But if you have some sort of side income, there's definitely some things you can do to help lower that. If you just add on some of your typical business expenses, like if you're using your cell phone, deduct your cell phone from your business. If you buy a new laptop and you're using your laptop for business, you can depreciate that over a few years. So just a few little things like that can help lower your tax bill. You know, the difference between $10,000 and $8,000 to a medical trainee could be $1,000 in taxes maybe that they don't have to pay. Or maybe a few hundred dollars, excuse me, not a few thousand, but a few $100, which is important. So I highly recommend, you know, checking out those kinds of things. For residents and fellows, now we start to get a little more interesting. For residents and fellows, you know, some of the things that come to mind first that I would encourage them to do is see if your residency program has a retirement plan and if they give you free money. And if they do that, definitely take advantage of that. Make sure to check that out so that way you can get a 50% or 100% rate of return for your money just on participating. And obviously there's not a whole lot of income either, right? You know, 50K, 60K if you're married, maybe 100. So there's not a whole lot of income to worry about yet. And I would say the same kind of thing about the side hustle that I said earlier about medical students. If you have a little bit of a side hustle, some 1099 income, maybe you are doing locums or something like that. You could do some of those things that we just talked about. You could even set up your own retirement plan to get some really nice tax deductions and things like that. And at this particular point, your student loan interest, if you're paying any, at this particular point, that is tax deductible. Up to about $100,000, $120,000 of income, you can still write off some of your student loan interest. Now, once you're a practicing doc, that's no longer the case. You're not going to be able to do that anymore. That option is gone now that you're making money and having to pay it back.
Yeah, I was super bummed when Josh started making some money. I was like, oh my gosh, we just lost our tax credits for having kids. We lost our tax credit for student loan interest. We lost our tax credit for everything. It felt like, I think maybe charitable still counted, and that was about it. It felt like.
Right. Well, the good news for this year, depending on how much money someone's making, the child tax credit in 2018 actually rose. So off the top of my head, I want to say it's 300,000, 400K. Nice. I can't remember off the top of my head, but before it was only 100K. But now you can get that child tax credit, which actually doubled in 2018 compared to 2017. So not only did they raise the threshold, they also increased the credit. So a lot of physicians are going to be able to take advantage of that. Perhaps orthopedic surgeons and those kinds of folks may not be able to, or if you're a two-physician household, depending on the kind of money you're making, that it may not be eligible there. But many physicians, that is now eligible. Some other things to think about if you're a practicing physician. If you own your own practice, or maybe you have a side hustle again, you could think about something like a subchapter S corporation. Now, I don't want to get too much into the numbers because I know that that's not the focus of the show, but depending upon your situation, that could save you easily $5,000 to $10,000 in taxes. $5,000 to $10,000 back in your pocket by having an S corp potentially. There's exceptions
and,
for this.
And do you need to have an S corp? Can you do that through an LLC? Because now you're getting interesting. Because I started, you know, my little business here that makes no money right through this podcast, but I set mine up as an LLC. So have I already messed up?
Well, it depends on your state. You know, you have to be familiar with your state's laws. So some states are better off LLCs, some are S-corps. And what's really wacky and weird is you can actually elect to have your LLC treated as an S-corporation.
Do what? See, this is why those of us in the real world are like, yeah, like, can we make it more complicated? So first pick, but then you're going to follow rules for the one you didn't pick. Is that what you just said?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, totally. And then there's a whole bunch of other different ideas that I could throw out at people. Some of the big things really come back to the kind of retirement plan that you pick. And I don't want to get into all the different types and how that works, but just know that there are some retirement plans that you could sock away $100,000 or $200,000 a year tax deductible. That's out there. Some other things to think about for those of us with families is adding on your kids as employees. So if you have kids that are like 10, 11, 12, maybe you could wrangle them in to help them with some of the paperwork or little things here and there, mailing for you, you know, whatever that may be. And you pay the kids, let's say $6,000, $7,000 for kids, there's not going to be any tax on that money, zero. So that's a nice way to save money for college or to get money that you could funnel to pay for their tuition if they're going to private school. Or there's so many different ways that you could utilize that money, save for their retirement or help them save for their first house or whatever. They want to buy a car, right? Great way to save up to buy a car by paying your kids, and then you're not getting taxed on it. They're not getting taxed on it. It's a win-win situation.
So in my home office, I can have the kids like cleaning the floor and dusting and
heck yeah,
can pay
absolutely. Tyler Perry once told me that the best people you can have as servants are kids. You know, that's what it's all about. Have them put them to work and have them earn a little bit of money.
That's kind of interesting because, you know, as far as like an allowance goes, I'm only going to give them a few bucks for something like that. But this way, you know, I could actually like, it could be a win-win for everybody.
Exactly. Exactly. And then there's definitely a lot of other things you could think about, like a healthcare savings accounts and those kinds of things. Now, I'm talking a lot right now to our physicians that own a practice, or maybe they're doing locums and having 1099 income and those sorts of things. If you're not that and you're employed by a hospital, some of the things that you could think about are, of course, maxing out your retirement plans. Usually there in many hospitals, there's two. So make sure to use both of them. I mentioned contributing to a healthcare savings account, which let's talk about that a little bit more. You put money in that, you get a tax deduction. You take money out of it for health specific reasons, it comes out tax free. So it's like the best of both worlds. Put in money, tax deduction, take out money, tax-free. An IRA, 401k, all those kind of vehicles, they don't do that. An HSA does. So definitely make sure that you're taking advantage of that if you can.
Yeah, those always make me nervous because I feel like they're going to expire. You know, oh, you didn't use the money. And I don't know, there's always so much fine print with this. I feel like overwhelm becomes a big thing.
Well, and every organization is different too. Mm-hmm. So we might be looking at previous other kinds of plans, like an FSA, that you are right. FSAs, it expires, right? You have to use it by the end of the year. And HSA does not. An HSA builds up over time. So all these acronyms we're talking about, it can be really confusing when you look at one versus the other. But a healthcare savings account, HSA, is the kind of thing I'm talking about. And more hospitals and employers are moving towards that because usually match those up with high deductible plans, which makes it better for the employer. So it's kind of a win-win situation in a lot of ways.
So at what point would you recommend that we don't do our own taxes? I know for us, I've done our taxes forever. I've probably lost us several thousand dollars. I don't know. But I did them forever simply because we had one income most of the time. I taught school off and on during our training. But in either case, we were just both W-2 employees, right? So it all seemed very straightforward to me. I used TurboTax. I filled out the forms. I double-checked everything. I'm like, I think we're good. And we weren't paying money. And so it was really easy for me to feel confident. Now that Josh is making more of a salary, and next year as he becomes a full-fledged attending again, you know, the salary of course will increase from what it is right now as a fellow. And then on top of that, I've started my business and I'm just starting to feel like, whoa, 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 I'm getting a little too much going on. So at what point do you think someone needs professional advice versus doing it on their own?
That's a great question. And this is something that I think a lot of people struggle with. So I think you really tapped into something there that I see commonly, and a lot of people ask that question. I think the way that you have looked at it so far is perfect. So when you have a W-2 job and that's all you got, everything's easy. Everything is really easy, honestly. I mean, TurboTax works perfect for that situation. When you start dealing with more complicated matters, like let's say you have the awesome problem of having an estate with like $3 or $4 or $5 million, you might need to see not a CPA necessarily, but someone that might help with tax reduction as thoughts on that. When you are having your own business or you have a side hustle where you have locums or you have a podcast like we do and you're making money off of it, or you have your own practice, then you really should have a tax preparer help you. And ideally, there's really two different kinds. There are proactive tax planners and there's bean counters. Most CPAs are bean counters. They prepare returns. They don't help you proactively reduce your taxes. So just be aware of the difference. Now, the bean counters are just fine. They prepare the return. They make sure everything's in line with the law. But this time of the year, if you go and ask them, hey, how can I reduce my taxes? They are so underwater with like 5 billion different returns. They're not going to have the time of day for you. If you're looking to do proactive tax planning, you need to talk with someone in June, July, August, end of the year before everything comes to an end. And I think even with side hustles, if you're making less than $15,000 from your side hustle, it's probably not worth doing. You know, you just do it on your own rather than have a professional help you. Because that's not enough money to justify paying someone $500 or $1,000 to help you find, you know, $500 to $1,000 worth of tax deductions. But if you're making $100,000 or $150,000 or $50,000, you know, you could find ways, like I was talking about with the subchapter S corporation, that can save you $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, which now makes that $500 to $1,000 investment not so bad.
Very interesting. I just wanted to ask you, if people want to dive deeper into this, to learn more about you or to learn more about taxes in general, what are some resources you'd recommend?
Oh man, there's so many resources out there. Obviously, I have my own. So before I talk about my own, let me plug for other people too. So a lot of people are familiar with Jim Dolly, the White Coat Investor. Certainly he has lots and lots of resources for do-it-yourselfers, great blog specific for physicians, as well as Physician on Fire, who's part of that same network. One of my favorite other podcasts, Knee Darko, has a podcast, Docs Outside the Box, which I consider Knee a good friend. He has great material on there, which I've been on there, as well as other people talking about taxes and all kinds of side hustles and things that people could think about. And then, of course, I have my own stuff. So I've got to plug my own stuff, right?
Feel free. Tell us where to find you.
I have my own podcast, the Freedom Formula for Physicians, which you can find at drfreedompodcast.com, D-O-C-T-O-R, freedompodcast.com. And I have all those books I mentioned earlier too, the Freedom Formula for Physicians, the book, the Tax Reduction Prescription, which we're having a new version coming out really soon. And then the latest book, which is really for the medical trainee and young physicians that are newly in practice or residents and fellows, is called The Physician's Guide to Money and Life. Check out all those things. Definitely hit up the podcast. We're going to have you on there here in just a minute here too. So
yeah, that'll be fun. I'm sure I'll have lots of great financial advice for you. I'm just kidding. I'm like, you want me to tell you how to budget on $20 for groceries? I got you covered. You want to talk tax law? I'm not so sure, but we'll try it. That'll be awesome. We didn't really talk about real estate. That seems to be very trendy. Like a lot of physicians get into real estate. Would you suggest that or say avoid it?
I'll tell you, the wealthiest people I know often were in private practice and they own the building. So if you look at it this way, actually, we just ran into this situation ourselves where I was really pounding the table with my partners. Hey, we need to buy a building. And as a matter of fact, what happened was they lowered our rent by about $1,000 a month. That kind of made it for my partners like, I think we're kind of comfortable here. We don't really want to change. But my plan is still to buy a building. So we'll see what happens in the future for me personally. If you think about it this way, you know, you pay rent for having your practice. Just like with owning a house, right? You pay rent to someone every single month. You walk away with nothing. With the building, even if it doesn't appreciate in value, even if it doesn't go up in value and it stays the same, if you paid that off over 20 years, you're done. You have the value of a building. It's like another piece of your retirement. So I personally am very strong on believing that. Now I'll tell you that some of the best opportunities are the ones that you know. You know, I think many physicians make a mistake of going and investing in real estate just because they hear it's cool, but they don't know the building. They don't know the area. They don't know anything about it outside of, I'm going to make all this money, right? You know, they see the dollar signs in front of them. Whereas if you have your practice in the building, if you do surgeries at that surgery center, you know it, right? You're familiar with it. So I think those are great opportunities, but I would caution people to go with what you know, not with what you're getting curbsided by another physician to say, hey, check it out. If you're a spouse of that person, you know, slow them down a little bit and say, do you really know this? And really cause them to think about what the consequences could be. Because I always look at it like if you own your own building and you're the tenant, well, you know you're going to pay the rent, right? Versus someone else you don't know that may not pay the rent. So I personally aspire to own our own building, but we just negotiated for the next 3 years and they lowered the rent on us. So it was an offer we couldn't refuse. That I'm sure will not always be the case because rent will rise, I'm sure, at some point in the future.
Well, that's good advice. Definitely, I think you have to study all these things out and it's always a bit of a guessing game in the end, right? Because anything can happen. I worry too about just like taking on the liability of a building. I guess I'm worried about like damages to the building or just the fact that, yeah, if you could go pay cash for the building, that sounds like a good idea, especially if you have a renter, right? That can pay you back. But when you're going into big time debt for the building, I don't know. I guess I'm just kind of conservative when it comes to that stuff.
Well, I just get back to if you're the tenant, then it's cool, you know, but if you're relying on everybody else to fill it up and you're not the tenant, then yeah, you're taking a lot more risk. Although obviously people do that all the time with buying apartment buildings or buying rentals that are houses and everything else. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. It's just a higher level of risk. which might be good. And I think it really depends on where someone's at. You know, if you've gotten to the point where you've paid down your student loans, or maybe you're on your way to do that and you're budgeting, that could be great for someone that's a saver. But if someone is just struggling to make it month to month, you know, they have $350,000 of student loans and they have like a $3,000 a month payment towards it. And it's like, they got three kids and they're just struggling to make it month to month, which a lot of people don't get that about doctors. But when you have a mortgage of student loans already, that really takes a lot out of you, and you're living on the West Coast where homes are a lot more expensive, that just changes things for people. So I think you really have to gauge your situation and see where you're at. If someone is already highly leveraged and has poor cash flow, I think it could be a wrong decision for them. Because like you said, stuff does happen and you might have to throw some money at it from time to time.
Well, that is great advice. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
All right. Is there anything else you would like to share with my audience?
Well, I think definitely get empowered with knowledge. And I always say to folks that knowledge is power, but it's really knowledge plus implementation that gives you power and freedom. So if you've learned something today, maybe just one thing that you thought was helpful, whether it's a resource or a S corporation or paying the kids, don't just sit on that. Get it done. Implement it, because that's what's going to help you get there. So podcasts like these are wonderful for listening and for inspiration, but definitely implement so you can get the freedom that you desire.
Yeah, well, this has been super fun. I appreciate you sharing your personal story and giving us some information just kind of on the surface about taxes, but also some great resources. Thanks for being generous with those and plugging other people as well. I think this will be good for the listeners.
Absolutely. Well, it's fun. This has been a great conversation.
All right. We'll have some links in the show notes to all kinds of stuff that you guys can go out and learn and spend your time studying. So I hope that the listeners enjoy that. Thank you so much for being on the show, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Married to Doctors podcast. Our mission is to make successful homes happier. To learn more or to share your story, visit our website at marriedtodoctors.com.
All right, my friends. Well, that was the show for today. I hope you loved it. And I just want to give you one more reminder. My newest book, The Young Physician's Guide to Money and Life, is available right now. $25. You get the sun, the moon, the stars, all kinds of bonuses, $100 worth of priceless knowledge. Are you ready to go and pick this book up? If so, you're going to want to get it from me and get all those bonuses by texting DOCBOOK, that's DOCBOOK, to 44222, or going to the website drfreedompodcast.com/DOCBOOK. Again, snag your copy now by texting DOCBOOK, that's all one word, to 44222, or going to drfreedompodcast.com/DOCBOOK.